Okay, you're tuned to WHPK 88.5 FM in Chicago. You are now listening to the Sitting in the Park show. Today we have a very special show because I have in the studio right now a legendary Chicago soul singer, both as a solo singer and as a member of a couple groups. And we'll be starting off the show with an interview with him, and it will be very interesting, so you should definitely keep tuned. So, first of all, can you introduce yourself?
Maurice Jackson.
Okay, and what groups did you sing with?
First of all, I sang with the Independents and a group called Silk.
Okay, and are you originally from Chicago?
Born and raised in Chicago, yes.
So, what part of Chicago are you from?
Southside, Chicago.
And what specific area?
A little place called Aldgale Gardens.
And that was the housing just south.
Housing project. Right.
The southern border of Chicago.
Yes,
right?
Exactly.
And is that inside? It's inside the city, though.
It's inside Chicago. Yes.
So it's just the absolute southern border.
Exactly.
So did you live there since you were born?
Yes, I was 2 years old when I moved there.
Oh, so you moved there when you were 2 years old.
Right, right.
And how did you get involved with music originally?
Well, it's something, first of all, it started in my father's church. And I began to realize that there's something that I'd like to do. And so I cultivated it. My mother sent me to a music school, I forgot the name of the place, in Chicago. And I took voice lessons. And it's because she realized it's something I really wanted to do.
How old were you when you took voice lessons?
I guess I was about 15.
And for voice lessons, were you learning secular music? Were you learning like classical voice? Like what types of thing were you learning when you were learning voice lessons?
Just taking voice training.
Okay.
Right, that's all. It wasn't classical. It was something preparing me for whatever I wanted to do.
Okay.
It wasn't a classic, it wasn't jazz or R&B. It was just strengthening my voice, being able to sing in a proper way, I thought.
So when you were 15, did you have a specific goal to sing a specific type of music?
Well, I remember they had a Harvest Moon Festival on the Sun Times, and I wanted to do that because I had goals I wanted to reach. And so I prepared myself. I sang this song called West Side Story. And I didn't win, of course, but I wanted to win. The problem was they told me that I did fine, but I wasn't dressed properly.
Okay.
At the time.
So you didn't have the presentation up.
Right,
up the,
right.
Up
exactly.
Par.
Exactly.
So what year was that? What year was
that?
Oh,
it was a long... I can't remember, so long ago. It was early on.
Okay. But was it so that was like a kind of a Broadway type of thing.
Right, exactly.
So did you know early on you wanted to be an entertainer?
Not some circumstances caused me to really move that way. And it's a lot of personal things that had to do with relationships later on. First, I just wanted to sing. But I guess when I was about 17 or so, I got just kind of really serious about it. And I began to win contests in like talent shows, whatever. I always took first place. And it kind of encouraged me to go on from that point. Like I remember at Harlan High School, I really won my first and second 2 years straight at Harlan High School, and I got the cash when I won. So that was encouraging, the incentive to go on. So I kept on developing in that way. And so from that experience, I got a thirst to do it, to sing more. My father didn't want me to sing. I had an opportunity to sign with Capitol Records.
Capitol Records,
right,
you're saying?
At the time.
When you were just 17 years
right,
old.
Right, 17 years old. But my father, being a minister, he didn't want me to do that.
Because it was secular music.
Secular music.
So you said at Harlan High School, so you were at Aldgale Gardens, right?
Right, right.
So how come you didn't go to Carver?
I went to Carver.
Okay, but you were
but,
at, you but went to the talent show.
The talent show in Harlan.
Okay.
Right, right.
So What do you remember? What did you at Harlan? You performed as a solo artist,
right?
Do you remember what you sang at Harlan?
It took 100 pounds of clay.
That Lenny Wells song. Say,
hey, listen. Yeah, sang that song.
So it was in the early '60s that you were in high school.
Yeah, I worry about you. Not that song. Arthur Price did that, and those two songs I went by.
So you almost got a deal with Capitol Records, right, but your dad kept you from signing.
Right.
And and you were about 17 years old, right, so you wanted to do kind of like, so that was kind of like still like jazz type vocals that you were
interested in. Well, I didn't really understand exactly what kind of music was at the time. It was just one of the songs I liked.
Okay.
Right.
So when did you decide to then more seriously pursue music?
I felt I was already doing it. I just moved in that direction. You know, when you really want, I tell you what happened to me. I went to a show to see Stevie Wonder and Jerry Butler. They were at the Regal Theater. And Stevie Wonder sang, Jerry Butler came out and sang the song, Your Precious Love. And when he sang that song, I got a little older then. He sang that song. I said to myself, that's what I want to do. As a matter of fact, they said I look like him. I guess because he was my mentor.
Okay.
He started me, really got me interested in singing.
He was your mentor, like, he was your inspiration, or he was your mentor, like, he actually, like, he knew you when he mentored you?
No, he didn't know me.
So he inspired me.
Okay. He inspired me to do that. And so I said, that's what I want to do. And I didn't know, I locked it in, because it was, when something's true to you, And you know it's within your heart it's true. You walk in that direction ready to realize it or not. So what I started doing, I started doing all kind of little venues here, singing here, this place here. I was a little older, of course. I couldn't go into clubs, but I'm getting a little rundown. I was a little older then when it was happening, because I couldn't go into clubs at that time. But I began to move in that direction. And circumstances took me to Reno, Nevada, early on. About 20 years old, took me to Reno, Nevada.
Do you remember what year you went to Reno? It was like early.
I went there in 1962, I think 62.
But you said you were doing those talent shows in like 63.
Well, see, I was in high school. In when I was 17, when 18. I can get all my figures correctly right because it's been so long ago. But I get my numbers mixed up sometimes.
But in the early '60s, you went to Reno, Nevada.
Right, in the '60s.
Okay.
Right.
And then, so how did you decide to go to Reno?
It's kind of personal where I went.
Okay. But basically, it was a place where you could perform.
Well, when I went there, I wasn't going really to perform. Some other issues I had.
Okay.
At the time.
Okay.
But when I got there, I never got yet. I got off the bus. Three were auditions for a place because early in the morning. I didn't understand why folks were out there early in the morning because I didn't really know about gambling. But people were gambling all night long. I was surprised to see everybody walking the streets in Reno, Nevada early in the morning. So it was really amazing to me. So people going into this place, they were. I went and walked and sit down. They were auditioning for something. I didn't know what it was for. So I sat down and listened. And I was the only African American in the place with no other color but white in the place. So I sat down. I was bold enough to go and ask, could I sign my name to the program? So
that was like the first day you were there.
The first day.
Okay.
Right. So I sat down, and I tried to get some people to play for me, but no one would play for me. So I went up, Mike Mirabelli, he was a state treasurer. He sponsored this program. And so I sat down 7-9, and the waitman called my name. They called my name, went up there, and I sang, I worry about you, and 100 pounds of clay. The same thing. So I sat there, and then Mike Mirabelli, he was behind the curtain like this, like waving, saying, hey, approving what I was doing. And everybody was kind of, and I was very excited. I thought I had an opportunity. I knew, I felt I did well. So I sit there, and they called all the names, and nobody called my. At the end, I was the only one sitting there. Nobody called my name, and I got up. I rejected. I felt real bad because wow, I thought I did well, you know. So I went on rejecting, my head down, and walked outside. I said, well, I thought I had an opportunity. I thought I was moving forward. I just got really disappointed. And 2 weeks later, I got a call. I got a letter, a card in the mail. It said, you're chosen first place.
Okay.
But they didn't know what to do with me.
So what was it? Was it a talent show? Like, what
it was a talent show. It was called Breakout. It was a TV program. They played every Friday, every Wednesday, every week they played it. We taped on a Monday and showed back on a Friday.
So it wasn't a taping, it was an audition for the taping?
Right.
Okay.
Right.
And you didn't even know what it was.
Right, right. but they didn't have to do it with me. I was the first African American to do that, so they had to figure out what to do with me. That's how it started.
And but it's good that you picked like kind of a pop song, like 100 Pounds of Clay versus R&B-ish song.
Right. Everything worked in divine order. So it worked out for me. And that's how I formed my first band, first mixed band in Reno, Nevada. Anyway, and we did a lot of work together.
What was the name of your band?
Maurice and the Mark IV.
So how did you find the guys for your band?
Well, they found me.
So did the guy that call you put the band together?
Well, it was Mickey Hager. Well, yeah, Mickey Hager. He was a keyboard player.
Okay.
They wanted somebody to front them. So they came to me and asked me what I said. Yeah, I'll do it. So we formed the group, and it helped me to have a mixed group because at the time it was difficult for African American to work, and a mixed band kept me working all the time.
And they probably needed the credibility of an African American singer too.
Exactly.
Yeah, so probably got them more work too.
Yeah, exactly. Got his work in the area. We're very well known in Reno, Nevada at the time. Went to Anchorage, Alaska. Traveled all down to the western parts. You know what I mean? And it was a nice group. I really enjoyed them a lot. You know what I mean?
So how long were you there before you started working? Like you were there for a few weeks and you already had Mickey and the Mark IV.
No, it took time to develop because I was really doing a lot of television then. Just doing Breakout.
Okay, so much you got your break on your first day.
Right.
And then you got lucky and you started working in entertainment as soon as you got to Reno.
Right. And started working. I was doing a little side jobs as well. So you really getting a whole lot of money then. But eventually I let it go and just did full time working with this group. Because we traveled all over the western states and Ely, Nevada and all different places like this. We did a lot of hops and what have you like this and kept us busy.
Can you talk about like what type of music you performed with the group?
We did the Beatles stuff. We did all the songs that era. Shake It Up Baby with a Twist and Shout, all these different songs like this. This kind of songs I started off doing and at that time. But this was their experience. And we did some Wicked Picket, Wilson Pickets, and we did some Otis Redding.
And it must have added like an era of authenticity to actually have an African American singer.
Exactly.
So the audience was.
They loved black music in the Western state. In fact, they still play the old songs. Other than the noobs in the western states like in Reno, Nevada and Salt Lake City, they still play those old songs all the time. James Brown. Anytime you go there, that's what you're going to hear. You're going to hear all this modern stuff like they're playing today. They like the old song. All the old songs with the old artists. They like live band music. And some blues, but they like Wilson Pickett, James Brown, those kind of eras, those people in that era.
So how long did you travel with the band?
I left in 1969.
So you were there for a long time.
Right, I was there for a long time.
And you told me that the band shortened their name at one point?
Yeah, see, what happened was, we were We move so fast. We're performing at the club called the Mapes Hotel in Reno, Nevada. The Mapes not there. They tore it down. Now, I went to a reunion there. They cut it down, tore it down. But we started at the Mapes Hotel. On the marquee, Maurice and the Mark Force was too large. So we changed the drawing to Citations for Billing. Because you see the checkmates had the main billing.
Sonny Charles Group.
Matter of fact, I saw him not long ago. Big, he's a big guy. Now he's real thin when I met him. But now they're the mixed group too, but they went from the Reno, Nevada. They travel like Las Vegas and what have you. They're the mixed group too. Bass player and the guitar player were white. And Sonny Charles, Sweet Louie, and Bobby.
And Sweet Louie just passed like a few months ago,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, right, right. I didn't know that, but I heard from you. I think I heard from you that he's passed.
So you became the Citations.
Citations. And only because the billboard, the marquee was too small to put Mars and Mark IV on there.
So how come your group never recorded?
We didn't have opportunities. We didn't have opportunities. That's one reason I left, because I wanted to record.
Okay.
I had a house. I bought a house. In a short time I was there, I bought a house. And I decided, I had my spirit, I wanted to record. That's why I left.
And you came back to Chicago?
Okay, and got connected, right? See, I recorded. I did. I recorded my first song with the Checkmates in Sparks, Nevada. But it didn't really go where I wanted it to go. So I felt it was time to move back to Chicago, where I felt the music was really being promoted. So I left there and came and got in touch with, you probably know his name, but Rodney Jones, E. Rodney Jones.
Well, obviously I know E. Rodney Jones.
Right, he became my manager.
Okay, well, can we back up a second? Okay. You said you actually recorded with Sonny Charles and the Checkmates. Was it released?
Yeah, it was released in Chicago.
So what?
Under Weiss, under was it Weiss? Right.
So that record we were talking about, it's called Maybe.
Maybe.
So you're saying Sonny Charles recorded that song?
For being at Sparks, Nevada, it was alive. It's like in the main auditorium, I was singing, and they were down, you know, in the hotel in the main room, on the board, recording me.
And Sonny Charles recorded that record, because it sounds like a Chicago recording kind of. But you're saying it was actually recorded in Nevada.
Reno, Nevada.
Okay, well, let me play the record and we can talk some more.
It's one of my favorite.
It's a nice sound.
Right.
Okay, well, let's play your very first recording.
My very first recording.
Which is Maybe, and produced by Sonny Charles.
The Checkmates. I say the Checkmates.
Sonny Charles and the Checkmates.
Right. They wasn't choice. It was the Checkmates, and I don't like to separate like that. It was the Checkmates.
Just the Checkmates.
The Checkmates.
Was that before they had Black Pearl?
Yes.
Okay, so produced by the Checkmates, and this is Maybe.
You chase me from my lonely.
Okay, that was just Maurice Jackson with the very first record he ever recorded. That was called Maybe. And he was just explaining that that was produced by the Checkmates when he was in Reno, Nevada. And then it was released in Chicago on the Wise label. Do you remember what year it came out? Probably around 69.
It had to be.
And that's very surprising to me to hear that it was the actual recording that they did, just because it has such a Chicago kind of sound.
Right.
And one thing I want to clarify is there were definitely two Maurice Jacksons working in Chicago, because there was an early Maurice Jackson record on Federal that's definitely not you, right?
No.
Okay. So I just wanted to clarify that, because I know that people later...
I really didn't know there was another Maurice Jackson.
Because I know that people later are going to be like, how come you didn't ask him about his Federal record? But that's, and I played it for you, and that's not you,
that's
for sure.
That's not me, for sure.
Okay, so at the time, you decided to move back to Chicago, and you had, did you take the demo and shop it around, and then you ended up on that label? Is that what happened?
What happened, I brought it with me and introduced it to Rodney Jones. And they placed me with Weiss Records. I've got the guy's name, but he accepted it and put me out on the radio.
And did it get any play?
Not very much.
Okay, but it was a nice record.
It was a nice record.
Promotion
is the key, really. Promotion is the key.
Yeah. But it did have a nice Chicago sound for the time. It just didn't get much.
I really liked the song. I really liked it. If it was promoted right, I probably could have got some play out of it, really.
And so you had permanently moved back to Chicago at the time.
Right.
So pretty much the person responsible for starting your recording career was the Checkmates.
The Checkmates, really. And I liked them a lot for that. They helped me a lot.
And did you keep in contact with them throughout the rest of your career?
No. When I left Chicago, Reno, Nevada, I didn't hear from him anymore.
Okay.
Right.
So when you came back to Chicago, was it your goal to become, did you do more recording? Did you get a manager at that point?
Well, Eli Jones.
Okay. So the next recording that you did, was it Lucky Fellow?
Lucky Fellow.
So how'd you get hooked up with that recording?
Eli Jones... got Emmett Garner and Charles Boyd and
Gerald Dickerson
to sit down along with Donny Hathaway to get a song on me. And so it came with Lucky Fellow and Step by Step. Lucky Fellow did very, very well. It took me nationally. It took me to Soul Train and what have you. I love the song by itself. I thought it was a good song. Don Hathaway did a fantastic arrangement on it. I love the way he arranged that song. To me, it's still one of my favorites. What they did do was, the first time I recorded it, it had background on it. But after they left there and went to Independence, they took the background off, and I didn't like that at all. I liked the voices that they had on there, the background voices. But when I went to the Independence, when they mixed it, they took the voices off. I didn't care for that much.
And I think there's actually three releases of it, right? Because there's the first version they released on Candlelight Records.
Candlelight Records.
Do you know whose label that was?
I really don't. I think that was a distribution.
Did Clarence Johnson have anything to do with it?
That name rings a bell.
Clarence
Johnson, yes.
Okay.
Exactly.
And then nationally it got released on Lakeside Records.
Right, Lakeside.
And that was like a different mix also.
Right.
And then...
it mixed it that way.
And then they put it on the Independence album.
Right,
and
right.
then you're saying they took off
they
the voices.
It. Right.
And then the voices on it, I only know this because I interviewed Gerald and he told me, well, actually Emmett told me who the voices were too. So he said the voices are Gerald, Charles, and Emmett.
Right.
And he told me that the operatic singers in the background are Donny Hathaway's wife and Leroy Hudson's wife.
Right.
So you had a whole mix of people singing on it.
Right.
So I can't do an interview with you without playing this record because it's one of your all-time classic Chicago record.
Right.
And
very well.
One of the best Chicago records and probably one of the best records from your career. So let me play this record, and then we can talk some more.
Okay.
So this is the original version of Lucky Fella that got released locally on Candlelight Records.
That's right.
And here it is. Okay, you're tuned to WHBK 88.5 FM in Chicago. That was just Maurice Jackson with all-time classic Chicago sound. That was just Lucky Fella, and that came out originally on the Candlelight label in, do you remember what year that came out in?
No, not exactly.
probably around 1970, something like that, 70, 71.
Right around, well, it came up about 69 and 70, right, about 70.
Okay, and that was probably one of your biggest solo hits, right?
Right, exactly.
And that got a ton of local play, right?
Exactly.
And did that even get national play?
National play, too. Yes.
And do you remember what cities it was big in?
I don't know, but see, when I performed in Soul Train in California, so, you know, that was a national program.
So you actually made not the local Channel 26 Soul Train, the national
Soul National Train. Soul Train, right.
Okay. Right. Well, I'd love to see the national
I footage. Wish I could find that. I'd like to have that.
Okay.
I'm trying to get a copy of that now. Like, if I can, you know, I'll let you know.
Yeah, I'll look out for that.
Please.
Maybe I could find a video collector.
I'd love to
that
get that.
Got the
I'd
national.
Love to have that on there.
Man, that'd be sick to see that.
I was
collection.
So
yeah.
Young. Yeah.
I bet that's out there, because I know that, like.
I heard that the Don Cornelius is doing that. He got.
He sold it, actually.
He did.
Yeah, he sold all of the rights to the Soul Train to some company. So it actually might all start coming out now, actually.
Well, it is. Because
he was keeping it all under lock and key, you know. But some company bought it, and they're going to start releasing it.
Now, even in Reno, Nevada, you know, I wish I could get some of those shots.
Well, those shows probably don't exist, actually, because a lot of those local TV shows, they never actually recorded them because it was so expensive to film it.
I see.
But if it was the local Soul Train, the footage probably exists.
Okay.
So it might actually come out now.
Oh, it would be nice.
Man, I'd love to see that.
I'll keep an eye.
I'll call you if I see it.
I'd like to have it for my grandchildren.
So that was a national hit then. If you were on the California Soul
right.
Train, was
exactly.
It? So that came out and that was your biggest hit. And you were telling me that Donny Hathaway arranged it
and it had
kind of a classic Chicago sound.
Exactly.
So did you tour nationally off of that also?
No, because after that it stopped because I went with Independence.
Okay, so but you released one more solo record, which you said was recorded about the same time, and that was Step by Step.
Step by Step.
Was that recorded at the same session?
Well, it was, because that's a B-side.
It wasn't the B-side. It was on another label, actually. It was on the Plum label.
Okay.
So, but it sounds exactly the same.
Right,
has
right.
Exactly the same kind of
right.
sound.
It was produced by Don Hathaway.
Yeah, yeah. They both songs have exactly the same kind of sound. But
I forgot about Plum Records.
But the B-side of both records is instrumental.
Okay, right.
So, but were they both done at the same session, you think?
I don't remember. It was so long ago.
Okay. Well, that's cool. I know it was a long time
right,
ago.
Right.
But
I record so many songs.
But that record didn't really get much play.
No,
right,
it didn't.
Step by Step.
It didn't. At
it
all.
Did have a nice sound, though.
Yeah, nice sound.
So, what's the story? How did the Independence form?
Well, the Independence form, I was performing at Helen Curry. And when I went to Paul Serrano's studio with Eddie Thomas at Art Productions.
Well, how did you know Helen Curry?
You know, it's kind of hard to remember exactly how I met her. I heard this young lady in one of this club called the Green Bunny, and she was singing. And that's how it really started. And from there, I don't really remember exactly how it all connected, but I realized one thing, that we began to work together. And from that experience, we began to form at a place called the Pumpkin Room with Ben Fernandez, called Benjamin and Company. As I was really started there.
So were you performing in local clubs at the time too?
Well, before that, I had a little band, and when I first came to Chicago,
back to Chicago,
a band was formed for me, and I started doing little local gigs around Chicago area and the suburbs, what have you, Chicago. I forgot about that. It's just Maurice. The time, and from there, there's so many things that I'm leaving out, because things come back to my memory. So I did a lot of local work, and then after that faded, Benjamin and Company became in view. Now the Independence was formed.
So Benjamin and Company, you were saying that was. you, Helen Curry, and someone named Ben Fernandez.
Ben Fernandez.
And you were a group that performed at local clubs?
Well, really one club, really. We were there for about a year at this club called a Pumpkin Room.
Were you a vocal group or a band?
A vocal group.
Okay. Did you have a band also?
Yeah, well, we had the band that I started with when I first came to Chicago came with me to Benjamin and Company.
What was the name of the band? You don't remember?
I remember.
That's fine. Okay. Right. So you were called Benjamin and Company, and was Ben Fernandez the leader of the...
Yes, he was the lead singer.
So you and Helen sang backup.
Well, it was like we sang together. I sang songs, he sang songs, Helen sang songs, and we did harmonies together.
What type of material did you do?
He did stuff like the Fifth Dimensions. You never will. Eiley Brothers. What not Eiley Brothers? I've got the name of the group. You never close your eyes anymore. We could. Just Love and Feeling. I've got the name of it. The Ivory Brothers, not the Ivory Brothers. It seems like you ought to know that.
I'm blanking on it too.
You lost a loving feeling. You lost that loving feeling.
I know what song you're talking about. I'm right. Just blanking on it.
Right. Well, that group, we sing some kind of songs like that. The Fifth Dimensions. We should do just classical songs like that. The Fifth Dimensions were very, very big at the time. So we did a lot of their songs. Just a loving feeling.
So you did like pop soul type songs?
Pop soul songs, right.
And you were at the Pumpkin Room for how long? Was it
for a year?
Okay,
right.
And Helen Curry had a solo career before then too.
Yes,
and she had gotten together with you and Ben Fernandez. How did you hook up with him?
Josephine Artis, she owned the she was manager of the Pumpkin Room. So she was trying to put groups to us together to do shows nightly. So, I don't know how, I can't remember how she heard about me, Helen, but she wanted to, so we came together with her and sit down and talk. And then we began to put a show together, for that venue. And it was very successful. We had people waiting in line every week to hear us perform.
Where was the Pumpkin Room located?
71st Street, or 71st, off Jeffrey.
Okay.
Right there. It was a very popular place.
And so how long were Ben Fernandez and company together before the Independents formed?
It wasn't a group. It was formed. We were together for a year. Benjamin and Company lasted for a year. And after that, we traveled a little bit. And then we broke up. And that's where the Independents came in that. After that.
Okay. So how did the Independents form?
Chuck used to come down to the Pumpkin Room. First I met him at the Paul Serrano studio. Eddie Thomas had Art Productions there. And Eddie was handling my record, Lucky Fellow. So Chuck was walking through there. He was selling, he had records, and he was trying to get me to do some of his songs because Lucky Fellow was doing well. And he was a writer.
So you're talking about Chuck Jackson?
Jesse Lewis Jackson's brother. Operation Push brother.
Okay.
Not in the day of Chuck Jackson, no.
Okay.
Chuck Jackson, Jesse Jackson's brother. And he was peddling songs. Him and Marvin Yancey were writing together.
Okay.
So he asked me if we wanted to do something together. I wasn't interested at the time because Lucky Fellow was doing well. I wasn't really interested. Some of his songs, I didn't really hear many of his songs, really. But he began to come down to the Pumpkin Room where we were performing. And then when we left the Pumpkin Room, went downtown to a place called the Happy Medium down on Rush Street. And while we were rehearsing one day,
that was still Ben and Company.
No, we had left Ben and Company there, and we left there and went.
Was that just you and Helen?
And we went downtown with another group to do it. And Helen became my female vocalist, so we were working down opposite of Benjamin Fernandez. I did the group broke up.
What was the name of your new group?
It is Maurice Jackson and Helen Curry.
So were you two separate artists?
Right, two separate artists.
Okay.
Right. So Chuck Jackson came down. Him and Marvin Yancey came to our rehearsal in the daytime. And I was really impressed by them coming. And when they did that, I consented, and Helen consented, to form a group based on the independence and what it means that we're independent. Work together, but as an independent artist.
Because you were always had solo careers.
Right, right, exactly. That's how the independence came together.
So was Chuck trying to get you to form a group the whole time? Because he was originally just a songwriter, right?
So he had a demo called Just As Long As You Need Me, and they needed somebody. Eddie Thomas really wanted, really for promoting this, he really wanted it to happen. Because he wanted to pull me from Lucky Fellow, since he was over my song, to come together with the independence. So he succeeded, and we formed a group, and off the song of a demo called Just As Long As You Need Me, the first song that we ever did. Now, that was a demo produced by Marvin Yancey and Chuck Jackson. So the group started that way.
Okay.
Off a demo.
So so Chuck Jackson had a demo with just him singing solo.
Yes, sir.
And
him and Marvin Yancey.
Him and Marvin Yancey were singing on the song.
On the song, right.
And they needed backup singers.
Right.
So did they take the recording and just add you and...
No, we never were part of that song. It sounds like us, but we weren't. He had another guy singing with him on that song, just a girl as well, in the studio. And the song became successful. People wanted to hear it. So they couldn't promote it. That needed the group. So that's why they came looking for Helen and myself.
So who's the other girl on the record?
I don't know them.
So basically, the Independents aren't singing on Just As Long As You Need Me.
No.
So on Just As Long As You Need Me, it's Chuck Jackson, Marvin Yancey, and some other girl.
Right.
But you're not singing on it,
no,
and Helen Curry is not
singing
on it. And that became one of the Independents' biggest hits.
Yes, exactly.
And I have the Billboard book here, and on the R&B charts, it actually went up to number 8 on the R&B charts.
Right.
But you're not singing on that record.
I'm singing on that song, that's promoting it.
But you actually formed a group, and you signed.
Right.
You signed to Scepter Wand Records.
Record.
So that record, it got released in April of 72.
Okay.
So is that when you signed to,
right, around that time, yes.
So then the second record that got released on Wand Records was I Just Want to Be There and Can't You Understand.
Yeah, right. That was I Just Want to Be There was my favorite song.
So
I love
fortunately,
that
I don't have that. I was going to cue that record. Let me see. Let me play. Given that I was going to cue one of the Independence records to play because I don't have it on a CD and I brought all vinyl. Let me play Step by Step since it's a short record, and
okay.
Then I'll cue one of the records that you actually do sing on.
All right.
And then and then we could talk some more.
All right.
So this is the record that actually we're going out of order, but this is the record that was the follow up to Lucky Fellow. This is Step by Step.
She's showing up for real. Step by step, I'm alone, so
couldn't think of the name for nothing.
Okay, yeah, so... Okay, so that was just Maurice Jackson with Step by Step. And we were just talking about how the very first Independence record actually isn't the Independence singing on it. It's just Chuck Jackson and Marvin Yancey with an unknown female singer on it. So the second record you were saying is your very favorite Independence record, and it's called I Just Want to Be There.
Right.
And that record, what's the lineup on that record? Who's the group on it? Who's singing on it?
The Independents.
But who were the Independents at that point in time? Were the three
Chuck members? Jackson, Helen Curry, and myself.
So Marvin Yancey was never an official member, right? He was just contributed to the demo, right?
Well, Marvin Yancey wrote all the music.
He was a songwriter with
Chuck
Jackson.
Whenever you hear a person singing real high, like a voice like that, that's Marvin Yancey. Like if you hear I Just Want to Be There at going out, you hear his voice. He had a real high voice with a falsetto voice. You hear him on that. But those are the extent of what he did. He wrote all the beautiful music. He was a fantastic music person.
Like him and Chuck Jackson were like partners in songwriting.
Right, right, exactly.
But he wasn't an official member of the Independents ever?
Well, to me, he was Independents, really.
Okay, so he was an Independent.
He was Independent regardless. He wasn't vocal, and he was... He wasn't profiled like that where we were, but he was really, to me, the backbone of the Independents.
Okay, so on I Just Want to Be There, there's four members. There's Chuck Jackson, Helen Curry, Maurice Jackson, and Marvin Yancey.
Marvin Yancey.
Who sings lead on I Just Want to Be There?
Chuck Jackson.
Okay, so does he sing lead on most of the records?
Well, no, there's some that don't sing by myself. I sang lead on four of the songs on the album.
Okay, so I have that.
Five, really.
Looking at Billboard, that even hit top 40. That came out also in 72, and that hit number 38 on the R&B Billboard charts.
Right.
So then your next single is the one that really hit really big.
Really big. Took us around the world, really.
And that song hit number one on the R&B Billboard charts. And that was called Leaving Me.
Leaving Me. It's a big song for us.
So what's the story with that? So that came out in, I have it hitting the charts right at the end of March of 73. And who sings lead on that record?
Chuck sings lead on that.
And so when that song hit, did you start doing more shows? Like, did you become really big then?
Oh,
what
God.
Happened?
Went all over. Went to Europe. Went to all the venues, all the main auditoriums around the country, and then we went out the country, Germany, Spain, England, Caribbeans. We did a lot of traveling on them. That took us on. In fact, they had Leaving Me in German.
What do you mean they had Leaving Me in German? You released a German version of it?
Well, it was in German. The whole CD album was in German.
You're saying they just released a German version
right,
of that?
Right, right.
But you didn't actually sing the songs in German?
No, I don't know how they did it, but it was in German.
I don't understand. Like, did people, they cover it in German? Like,
the album was in German. I don't know. Ask me how they did it, but it was in German.
Okay, well...
I brought one back with me.
Okay, well,
we were very popular in Germany.
Okay, you were very popular. You were
very popular, very popular in Germany.
Well, I couldn't do an Independence interview without playing your biggest record.
Right.
So let's play the record since I got it queued now. Finally, since I'm queuing on ancient old turntables, people don't understand. I got to drop the needle on the record and play the right side. So, I think I got the right side queued on the right record. This is Independence with their biggest record, Leaving Me.
Leaving Me.
Changing your mind. We don't talk no more like we used to do. Yeah, well, anyway, it's come over you.
Leaving me.
Huh, baby?
Can't be.
Tell me, baby.
What you telling me?
I want to know.
Baby.
Let somebody say.
Leaving me.
It just pulls back there.
Can't be.
I want you to go, baby.
Baby.
Listen to me. Lately I felt that you avoided my conversations. You would turn on the TV and you're in aggravation. I just don't know what I've done to you. But whatever it is, child, I hope one thing can't be true, and that is
leaving me.
No,
can't be.
What
you're telling me?
Yes,
baby.
Sometimes I'm on
leaving me.
Oh no,
can't be.
You don't know
what you're telling me.
Don't know what it's doing to me,
baby.
Okay, you're tuned to WHBK 88.5 FM in Chicago. You are listening to the Sitting in the Park show. We are in the middle of an interview with Maurice Jackson, singer of the legendary Chicago group The Independents. That was just their biggest hit, which was a number one charting record nationally on the R&B charts. That was The Independents with Leaving Me. And I guess the lineup on that record was Chuck Jackson, Helen Curry, and Maurice Jackson.
Right.
And does Marvin Yancey sing on that?
No.
Okay. And were there any other lineup changes after that record?
What do you mean by lineup?
Like did Eric Thomas ever join the group?
He came on the second CD.
On the second album?
Right.
So originally it was just three members with Marvin Yancey adding some extra
right,
backup.
Exactly.
So what's the story? Who was Eric Thomas and how did he join the group?
Well, we were looking for another person when one is person's leading, we need to keep the harmony sustained of three parts. So Eric was a good candidate. He had a high voice and he took on Marvin's character as far as giving us the high notes, because Marvin, he had the ability to, you know, to sing high. So Eric had that high voice. And if you heard, like, the second album, you hear Eric's voice and what his contribution to the next CD. But that's how we brought Eric in. We needed another voice. One, because if one person is leading and two persons singing in the background, it's not as strong as three people in the background singing.
So you wanted a fuller harmony.
Fuller harmony, yes, exactly.
Okay, so how did you find Eric?
He was from Operation Push, and they got him out of Operation Push since Jesse Jackson's brother was independent, and Eric was in the choir at Operation Push, and that's how he was introduced to us.
Did Chuck also sing in the choir there too?
No, he never did.
But he just knew him through Jesse then.
Right.
Okay.
He was recommended.
So you were looking for a high voice. Because was it for live shows?
Because Marvin didn't sing live. Live shows.
Can you talk about some of the touring you did and some of the places you went?
Well, all the major auditoriums around the country, like McCormick Place, Auditorium Theaters in Chicago here, Stockyards. Just about all the High Chaparral, places like that in Chicago. Then around the country, all the major auditoriums around the country, traveled Al Green, and Aretha Franklin, Marvin Gaye, Barry White, the Blue Notes, OJs, all of these persons we work with from state to state. And then we went out the country with Cool in the Game, with the Virgin Islands, Antigua, with St. Croix, St. Thomas. And then we went to Spain, to Madrid. We sang in Madrid, and we sang in Germany, East Berlin, Berlin, Frankfurt, Wiesbaden. And then we went to England, performing in England, places like that.
And do you have any particularly memorable stories, especially about being overseas? Like, what were the most excited, like, crowds overseas to see you?
Well, we were performing in Frankfurt at a place called the Big Apple. And it's kind of strange because we were singing and everybody looking at us like we were crazy. And we were singing, bringing our heart out. And I thought, well, maybe they didn't like us. But we kept on singing and performing to them. And then after we finished, they came to me and said, this is their response, "We love you very much." And I was going to talk about people because that's the way they responded to us. But I was looking for, how we react and I've been used. But there, the reaction is totally different, but they liked it just as much, but they showed it differently.
You're saying that they weren't emotional people?
No. We love you very much. So it was shocking. I'll never forget that.
They like wrote you a card.
Yeah. So it was different. I'll never forget that.
So one thing that's kind of amazing about your records that I've never seen before is you released that I think I've never seen. I mean, it's probably happened with some other groups, but I've never seen this before. Is you released 8 singles,
right?
And every single one of your 8 singles charted nationally on the Billboard R&B chart,
right?
Which, like no other group I can think of has done that. You know what I mean?
Right,
like the Impressions or whatever released, 30 singles or something like that,
maybe,
28 of them charted or something.
Right.
But you released 8 singles and every single one of them charted, so that's kind of amazing that you managed to do that.
We had a great group. Seriously, a wonderful group, really, seriously.
But I'm just saying you had good promotion, too.
That's the key. Yeah.
So what's the first record that Eric Thomas sings on? Here's the list of all the records.
I can see my glasses on. But.
So here's the records. You did Leaving Me, and then the next record is Baby, I've Been Missing You, and then It's All Over Now, The First Time We Met,
mm-hmm.
I Found Love on a Rainy Day.
I sang that one.
And Let This Be a Lesson to You is your last record.
Right.
Which is the first one that Eric Thomas sings on?
No, he's not on this album. It's on the second album.
So he's not on any of these records?
This is the first. This
these
is,
are all your singles.
This is the first time.
But I'm just saying these are all your all your singles that were released. So he's not on any of these?
No, he doesn't on those. No, he's singing on, but not singing lead on them.
But I'm just saying, which one does he sing on as the first record that he sings on? He joined the group.
Well, he did.
Does he sing on It's All Over Now? Does he sing on that song?
If it's if it's on this album. I can't remember how the place where if it's on this album here.
Okay.
If it's on that album.
But this album has okay. Well, I'll figure it out later. Okay, so, right. Okay. So eventually, around 74, that your last record came out in 74.
Leaving Me, couldn't hear about nobody. These are all the songs on the first album. These are the ones that Helen and I and Chuck did.
But this is the one that says Chuck, Helen, Eric, and Maurice.
This is the one that Eric's on then.
Okay. Okay, and then they re-released Lucky Fellow also, and they stripped your vocals off of
it.
Right. And then another thing I forgot to ask you is Lucky Fellow was redone by Leroy Hudson.
Right.
What did you think about that when he redid that?
I did a nice job on it. He was at Curtain Records.
Okay. But he kind of did like a more modern version
right,
of it.
Right, he did it, right. He had his own style. He had his only way of doing it. You know what I mean? I liked him a lot the way he did it. His only way, we interpret it differently. That's all.
So then the Independence, your last record came out around 74. Did the group break up around that time?
Yes, about 74, yes.
Like, what's the story with that? Did you just drift apart? Like, you were pretty successful.
Well, I don't know why the group didn't continue, but I thought I had a calling to the ministry.
Okay.
That's why I left.
Okay.
That's the only reason I left the group.
So you had a calling to the ministry, but later you restarted doing music, right?
I started really from a message, really, or what, this group, Silk.
Okay, so you formed a group called Silk around what year?
I guess about 75, 76.
Okay, and Silk, what was the membership of Silk?
Eric Thomas, Arthur Reed, and myself.
So you got Eric from the Independents.
Right.
And who was Arthur Reed?
He was a young man out of Operation Push as well.
Okay, so did Eric know him and pull him in?
Yeah, they sang in the choir together.
Okay, so you just needed a third member.
Right.
And did you have a manager? Did Silk have a manager?
Bob Schwade.
Okay. And I forgot to ask, the Independence manager, was your manager Eddie Thomas?
Yes, he was our manager.
Okay.
And he was our producer as well.
And Silk's manager, you said, was a guy named Bob Schwade?
Bob Schwade out of New York City.
And how did you get him as a manager?
Eric's father knew him. He heard our music, and he liked it, so he signed us to a contract.
So you actually recorded music before you got a manager? Silk did?
Right.
So you actually had a hit record called Party.
Party, yes.
Did you record that record before you actually signed to a label and got a manager?
No. What happened was they heard our demos. He liked them. And this was the piano and the singing. So he took a chance and signed us, and we went in the studio and recorded. And after from that, he picked Party as a song to come out.
So that was one of the songs you cut a demo on.
Right.
So the demos was just, did you cut it at a studio, or did you just cut it at your house?
Cut the house first.
Okay. And then you just sent the recordings to someone in New York, Arthur Schwade?
Bob Schwade.
Bob Schwade, I'm sorry.
And they hooked us up with,
was it Prager?
Yeah, Al Bell and David Porter out of Memphis.
And how did they hook up with this New York label, Prelude Records?
Because
they were hooked up with Stax, right?
Right. See, well, Eric's father knew Al Bell, and he got them to produce us, him along with David Porter. They worked as a team out of Memphis, and that's how it started. We recorded in Memphis and in Mississippi. Went from Memphis to Mississippi, recorded some of the voices there, and later music at one place, and the vocals another place.
Okay.
Right.
And so they picked Party because it was like a disco type.
Disco
record.
Type, and it was disco time.
And that became a national hit also, right?
Yes.
So you were pretty lucky with all your records. Almost everything you did was a hit.
Very fortunate.
Almost everyone I interview, everything I did, they did was not a hit. So you were lucky with your career. Mm. So let me play Party, and I have the album version, so you get part one and part two, okay. And we can talk a little bit
all
more.
All right.
So this is Silk, and this came out in 1977, and this is called Party. Okay, you're tuned to WHBK 88.5 FM in Chicago. We are in the middle of an interview with Maurice Jackson. That record was just from his second group. That was a national hit by his group Silk. And it's interesting because that came out in 1977 and it had a disco sound, but he was just explaining about how it was actually recorded and produced in Memphis by David Porter and Al Bell, is that right?
Right, exactly.
So it was interesting because it had like a southern disco sound, which I never thought about before, but it definitely had that kind of sound.
Right, exactly.
And it was a national hit in 1977.
Okay.
And there was a second, and it came out on Prelude Records in New York, which
right.
released mostly disco.
Right.
And there was a second record released on that label, Ain't No Need a Cryin' and On Fire.
Right.
And I played that off of an album. There was an album off of that. And you were telling me, I never knew this, but they actually released a second album off of that
right.
on that label. Is that right?
It's called Silk.
And the second album wasn't recorded in Memphis?
No, it's called Chicago and Paul Serrano Studio.
And who produced the second album?
Gene Barge.
Okay, legend in Chicago, by
legend
the way.
Legend in Chicago, Gene Barge.
One of the nicest guys ever.
Really nice guy.
And but the second album, they didn't release any singles off of it?
No.
And it didn't do anything?
It didn't do anything with it.
And did the
it should have been. It was a fantastic album.
Did the second album come out on Prelude Records also?
It came on Prelude Records.
Okay, well, I'm going to keep an eye out for that,
please,
too.
Please.
So after, how long did Silk stay together?
Oh, we didn't stay together the whole time. Oh, about a year or two.
One thing I forgot to ask you is, you know there was an earlier group from Chicago called Silk.
I know, I heard.
But it's a girl group.
Yeah, I know.
Okay. So you didn't stay together that long after
no,
that.
No, I wouldn't stay together.
So then around 1980, you released one more solo record, which was a really nice record that I want to play. And it came out on a label called Peral Records, which I think a guy named Sidney Thomas
yeah.
had something to do with
He's
this.
He's a cool writer.
And there was a, I think the label was also called Parallel Records.
Parallel Records. Also, he changed it to Messiah Records later on.
Okay.
Right.
And he had a release on the record under his own name, and I think there's one other record by Jake and John on this label. There's a few releases on this
right,
label.
Right, okay.
So what's the story? How'd you get hooked up with him?
Well, after the independence, I met him. He came to my house, and he encouraged me to sit down and write. So he's come to my house with his guitar, and we start putting songs together. And we had a close match with each other. We had a chemistry between each other. So we went in the studio together and put down some songs. One called Don't Stop Saying You Love Me. Several songs that we put down. I can think of the other song. It's so long ago.
But yeah, the other song is called True Love Is You.
True Love. I love that song too. It was a good song at that time. True Love Is You. Those are two songs that we put out, and some others that we had formulated to put out, but he died
recently.
It's been about 4 years now, 4 or 5 years now.
But this record, even though it's a great record, it didn't really get promotion.
No, no promotion at all. But a lot of people want to do that record even today.
Well, let's play the record and we can talk right, some more because
okay.
it's a great song.
Okay.
So this is the last solo record you had released on a single at least.
Right.
This is Don't Stop Saying
Can
You Love
Me.
I've been a lot of places. Yes. And I've seen a lot of things. And I've met a lot of people. I even been to the Taj Mahal. And I could only say I only met one person that has it all. And that's you, baby. You know why?
I never heard the words of love spoken so much meaning. And I've had many loves in my life. But the way you say the words I love you, makes me feel I've never been in love before. You're the rainbow of my life after a stormy day. And you're the whispering wind that made the willow sway. And the gentle breeze that cools the heat of day. That's why I love to hear sweet words. Don't stop saying it.
Okay, you're tuned to WHBK 88.5 FM in Chicago. That was just Maurice Jackson with the last record that, or part of the last record he released as a single in around 1980. That was a really nice track called Don't Stop Saying You Love Me. And if you're just tuning in, I have Maurice Jackson in the studio. So what have you been doing since 1980?
Well, I'm back in the studio. I have a group, my two daughters, and Felicia Jackson, Chuck Jackson's daughter, formerly was at the Independence, and Barry Burford, and we formed a group called Maurice.
Okay.
And so we were in the studio, and wrote some songs that I thought were very inspiring, inspirational songs on the CD. It's not R&B anymore. All inspirational songs. And so myself, my daughters, and Felicia, I got them on leads. Almost like the Independence, almost. That's what I've been doing. And my latest CD is called Maurice. The first one was called It's Been Revealed. This album here is called, the second CD is called How Can You Say You Love Me?
Well, we're going to play something off your CD. But have you been doing any other music stuff since 1980 before your new Maurice project?
No, I stopped for a while, but I went back to school in theology and studied for a long time.
So just now you're getting back into music?
Right. In the last 3 years, right.
Okay, so you've been focusing on the ministry since 1980?
I was in ministry.
So your new project is called Maurice, and you said it's you and your daughters?
Right. Loisanne, Nicole, and then Felicia, Chuck Jordan, and Barry Burford.
And you said you released one previous CD?
Right, called It's Been Revealed. You don't have that with me, but this is the latest one called Maurice.
And are you on TV every Saturday, is that right?
Every Saturday.
And is it on the internet? Is it on TV or is it on the internet?
The internet.
So I have the website where you're on TV. I have it written down. It's pasenterprise.tv/kickem_keepem.html.
Right.
And you're on MySpace as Maurice the Group, is that right?
Right.
Do you want me to give out your contact information also?
Please.
So your contact information is 708-359-4156 or 708-612-4227.
Yes.
And your email is mauricethegroup@aol.com.
Yes, exactly.
And so you, right now you're focused on your project,
right.
this project, which is, like you were saying, it's sort of like a new version of the Independence, but with your daughters.
Right, my daughters, yes.
And you have a new CD out, and is it released yet, or you're just kind of finishing it up?
We're just finishing it up.
And is there a song that you're pushing off of the CD?
Well, it's called How Can You Say You Love Me.
Okay.
Number two on the CD.
Okay, but the track that we're going to play is actually about, it's not that track, right?
No.
What's the track we're going to play?
All Gill Gardens.
Just because we're playing about Chicago, right. And you're from the garden.
All Gill Gardens, my home.
Okay, so this is going to be the last thing we play, but before we play it, do you have any last words for the audience?
I pray that you enjoy listening to my group, and I'd like to hear from you. We would like to hear from you.
Okay, well, please call up. We gave out the info if anyone wants to call up Maurice. And thanks so much for coming up
and
telling
your
story. You're a legend, and you had an awesome story.
Appreciate you so much, Bob.
Okay, so here is Maurice's new group, just called Maurice, and this track is called Altgeld Gardens.
Block 8, Block 9, block 17.
Living on the south side, south side of Chicago. Just living on the south side, south side of Chicago.
My home, y'all. All Gil Gardens. I never forget All Gil Gardens. Yeah. I love you. I love all of you. I'll never forget you. And all the wonderful times we shared together.
Just living. Just living.